The Guardian.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Today, the FA in crisis. From the outrageous to the bizarre, role plays and mock Caribbean accents make for a depressing day at the top table of English football. On the pitch, the Champions League. Spurs have arrived. Jose defending. Conte carries on complaining. City beat Napoli and Liverpool hit a record 7, looking like bright orange marker pens. We'll round up the rest of the European action. We'll work out which Premier League manager would win the Royal Rumble. We'll take your questions, feedback corner, and that'll be Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Have a panel today. Baz, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Archie Rintutt, German football expert, your debut.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello.
If I do that Kevin Campbell mixing up with Kev Campbell joke, will you regard it with the same pain that you did when we had you on the phone, or will you treat it with more mirth and joy?
To be honest with you, I actually didn't get what you meant the first time round. It was only listening back to the podcast that I actually truly understood it. And then I did a much louder groan to myself at home.
Okay, great. So, yeah. Well, it may come up. Paolo Bandini. Chris says, nice to have Paolo on. Loads of Italian football and laughs like Judge Reinhold.
Now I feel under pressure to deliver a Judge Reinhold laugh, but maybe I should save it for later in the podcast.
Listen, if it happens, it happens. Yeah. If it doesn't, if you don't laugh once...
I mean, it's really on the rest of you, isn't it? It's on the rest of you to put me in that place.
Barry, huge pressure on you to do something funny so that Paolo laughs at one point in the next hour.
Like who? Judge Reinhold?
I think he's that the guy from The Simpsons. Who's Judge Reinhold? I thought it was
He's an actor, isn't he?
I thought it was the one from The Simpsons. Who's the judge in The Simpsons?
No, he's one of the cops in Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Is he?
Not the one with all... the guy with all the guns.
Oh. Oh, well, I couldn't even remember which the judge was in The Simpsons.
Is he the guy... doctor who laughs in The Simpsons.
Ah, it's the doctor, yeah. Okay, there you go. I didn't think you laughed like him either.
Dr. Hebbard.
It's a much deeper laugh, isn't it? I was going, I don't think Paolo laughs like him. If he could, at one point, pull out a Dr. Hibbard laugh as well. That would be great.
Think about that, yeah.
Right, on to slightly more serious matters. The FA have apologised to Ennio Luco and Drew Spence after finding that Mark Sampson made remarks which were discriminatory on the grounds of race. This was the DCMS hearing yesterday. All the major players involved were grilled by MPs. Very strange stories of goalkeeping coaches doing mock Caribbean accents and role plays to show the lionesses what it's like to be a lioness and show what selfish behaviour is. Our head of sport is Owen Gibson, obviously covering this story. Owen, first of all, just explain what happened yesterday.
So, yeah, following a series of stories by Daniel Taylor, who's our chief football writer, who's basically been pursuing this story for some time. Off the back of that, the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee decided to hold a hearing in which they would quiz the main actors. Ennio Luco, who former England footballer, and the various FA executives involved. It would have also quizzed Mark Sampson, yet he was sacked 2 or 3 weeks ago for what the FA said was a separate incident that had come to light and wasn't connected to this case. It's quite complicated to unpack exactly what's gone on here. I mean, but at the heart of it was the way that Luco felt she was treated by Mark Sampson and really by extension by the FA after that, in what looks like a series of kind of cock-ups and cover-ups, really.
Like you say, there are lots of strands to this. I was listening to Ian Wright on the radio yesterday sort of talking about the bravery of Ennio Luco to not just make the complaint in the first place, but to carry on with it and what it's like to be a black person who does that and then face, when it goes public, the inevitable sort of race card being played and all those things. And he made a real point of saying that her persistence is commendable in what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's been incredibly brave and strong. And I think that was the main thing about yesterday, that sort of contrast between this very measured, precise evidence from Ennio Luco, who's, you know, incredibly smart, a trained lawyer, all the rest of it, and the FA suits who came afterwards, who couldn't get their story straight, who were kind of falling over their details, who made these sort of oafish asides about institutional racism being fluff and about the way they were really good guys and, you know, kind of how surely no one could doubt them. That contrast was really telling, and I think Ian Wright was absolutely correct. I mean, he's kind of the big step that's necessary to make this sort of complaint and then to carry on when you keep being knocked back and keep being publicly traduced by some of those that you're making the complaint about must be huge. She's been incredibly impressive.
Oh, and like when I see, you know, a big company or whatever, and these guys at the head of the FA all have sort of impressive-ish pedigree in other fields, you kind of tend to assume they know what they're doing. I mean, obviously, you've worked long enough covering sports administration before reaching your current exalted position to know that they don't. But it's very dispiriting just to see. You mentioned oafishness there. It's just catalogue of failure after failure after failure. And the astonishing arrogance of these people to think they can just swagger in to the select committee and sort of the mindset, oh, we'll be all right, we'll be fine. And then just to watch them get absolutely ripped to pieces. It's you know, it was a car crash, basically. Will they have to go and be replaced by, you know, maybe another set of buffoons who are equally as incompetent? Or is there some small possibility they might actually learn from this and maybe they could stay in place and be better at their job, or I mean, in some way competent?
That's the big question. I mean, do we gain anything by every 2 or 3 years a FA executive class falling on their sword and having to kind of, you know, go through the whole process again? They'll go and hire another sort of middle-aged white man from another business sector and they'll come in and repeat the same mistake. So, I mean, I did hear some people advancing that argument last night that maybe the sort of slightly counterintuitive thing to do is to leave them in place and hope they can learn from this.
It's not one I make with
this,
any...
You know?
Sort of, you know, I don't want people to think I'm saying they should be left, but, you know, just replacing like with like. But I mean, surely they also have to be punished for this staggering levels of insensitivity and incompetence and arrogance and oafishness.
I think the point is there some sort of institutional change that needs to happen rather than just changing the cast list and just repeating the same mistakes over and over again? And I mean, actually, part of the problem yesterday, I thought, was that both Greg Clark and Martin Glenn can point to things they've done in the name of diversity. So Greg Clark did get some minor changes through to the FA's governance, so they'll have women on the board, for, you know, two women mandates on the board. The FA council will change slightly. Martin Glenn can point to having doubled the amount of money they're putting into women's football and so on. So these they sort of rocked up thinking they're good guys. And that they haven't, you know, and sort of slightly, and that was part of the problem for me. They slightly, there was an air of them slightly wondering why they were the ones under attack. It should have been obvious to them why they were the ones under attack.
You sort of think you prepare for that, you know. We prepare for this podcast, and it's not quite as important as being sat in front of a load of MPs. You prepare for things, don't you? I hosted the last Kick It Out, Raise Your Game thing. And Greg Clark was there. He was on a panel, spoke very well, seem very well-meaning, and in total contrast to when you hear about, like I said in the intro, you hear about a goalkeeping coach doing a mock Caribbean accent to someone who is actually of African origin anyway. But it sounds like a 70s sitcom, yeah, doesn't it? And then this role play about, what is this? The squad has sat down and somebody has brought in an actress who happens to be black, you know, to show what selfishness is. What scenes do they do? I mean, I know that's might be getting away from the point, but
I mean, it's all very David going, Brent, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. All,
and you just think, yeah, the gap between that for me is one of the telling things. The gap between the rhetoric and the reality of what seems to have gone on, the gap between the sort of the public pronouncements and some of the things that we know went on in private, such as the kind of this allegation from Eni that that the FA says you can't have the rest of your money unless you sign a document saying we're not institutionally racist. The FA denied that happened, but that was her allegation. And like the reply that Greg Clark sent to the PFA lawyer when he, by the letter, he sent this very dismissive reply. And you just, that's the danger for them, that it highlights this gap between what they say is happening, which is a modern, progressive, new FA, and what is really going on, which seems to be that we're not much further forward, which is the sort of depressing thing, I think.
What does the Gibson gut tell you is going to happen next?
I mean, it's difficult to say because, I mean, in other businesses, it would be hard to see how a chief executive would survive this. That the kind of, you know, the shareholders would demand he would go and there'd have to be a change. At the FA, it all depends on the people around the boardroom table. If they get the sense that, you know, that Martin Glenn is weakened by this and they'd be better off with a new guy, they won't, you know, they won't think twice about, you know, seeing him out the door. My sense at the moment is that there's a bit of a circling of the wagons, and maybe this is part of the problem, and that they want, you know, that they would try that they're going to try and see this through. But partly depends on what comes out from here, and I think what pressure is brought to bear on the FA. But whatever happens, it has to be some sort of watershed moment. We can't keep coming back here every 2 or 3 years to say what a shambles the FA is and something's got to change.
I mean, you say that.
I'll see you here in 2 or 3 years to discuss it.
Oh, if that's a 3-year contract, if that's a 3-year contract, Owen, I'll take it. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate that. Owen Gibson there, head of sport. All right, on the pitch, English sides, all top of their groups in the Champions League, played 15 in total, 1-11, drawn 4, lost 0. 440 against 8. The Premier League is the best league in the world, Barry, and this is proof.
I think it's a bit early to say that. I'm not sure why everyone seems determined to make out that this is indicative of the Premier League's greatness. You know, they're doing well, but it's the group stages. They're fairly inconsequential. I don't think anyone's expecting anything else but for the English teams to go through. I mean, in these group stages so far, we've had a 7-0, a 6-0, 2 5-0s, 2 4-0s, a 4-1, and 10 3-0s. So that's 17 matches out of 48. 35% of them basically have been non-events, no contest. Now, admittedly, you know, the who's at Barcelona, Juve was one of those 3-0s, and they're obviously both good teams. But I think reading too much into what's going on in the group stages is foolish at this stage. Wait till we get to the knockout stages and then we'll see how good the English teams are.
Paolo?
I sort of simultaneously agree and completely disagree. I agree with the point the group stages are massively sort of people make conclusions from them that turn out to be totally false. And I think about the fact that Juventus, when they went to the Champions League final just 3 years ago, they barely got through that group. They had a game at home to Olympiacos, which was hairy indeed, and prompted Max Allegri's sort of famous few tweet, which was just the fact of scraping through the groups at that point was ended up being a bit of a triumph for them. So I think that a team that is playing poorly or well at this time in September, October, is not necessarily doing the same in April or May when it matters. Having said that, I think we can look at some not too distant past for English clubs making an almighty fist of the group stages. I mean, you think about Liverpool, and the game that came to mind for me when they were smashing Maribor was that Ludogorets game away from home, which isn't ancient history. You know, this is a club that is at least doing these games and making them look simple in a way that I think English clubs haven't necessarily in recent years. And I do think that Tottenham going to Real Madrid and getting a point is impressive. And I also think that the first half hour of Man City against Napoli was pretty spellbinding stuff. They did sort of fade from there. But I think the English clubs are better than they have been in recent years. That doesn't mean they're going to go and win the whole competition necessarily, but they are better.
Archie, you're nodding.
Worth pointing out that Real Madrid finished second in their group last season.
It's true.
Before going on to win the competition to Borussia Dortmund, it was at the time. So, and I mean, it is also worth probably saying that it only took a couple of billion for the Premier League to dominate in the Champions League.
Well, you know, it did cross my mind last night during the Chelsea-Roma game, which was a hugely entertaining game. I'm sure we're going to talk about it. But it crossed my mind that Conte, when he left Italy, the whole thing that everyone sort of crucified him for and kept talking about was this comment that you can't go to a 100 euro restaurant and expect to eat dinner with 10 euros. And then the next season, Juventus went to the final. I think that what was interesting was Chelsea very much were defined in this game by players of the sort that Roma can't afford. Roma, most expensive signing ever is still Gabriel Batistuta, I think, for about 30 million euros. You've got David Luiz, who costs more than that. You've got Alvaro Morata setting up the first goal, who costs more than that. You've got Eden Hazard doing it. You know, it's definitely true that for what they spend, the English clubs should expect for this to be an easy ride, but they still haven't made it look this easy in recent years.
It was a great game, wasn't it, Barry? And that volley from Dzeko was just a total delight.
It was sensational, running away from goal, the ball delivered. I can't remember who provided the assist, but it was from inside the centre circle. And just to
it was the man who was ridiculed in his time in England.
Yeah, 3 years ago yesterday, or against Manchester City, he made his Premier League debut, which of course saw him get sent off and Sergio Aguero score four. So yeah,
Yeah, but yeah,
it's almost like some players can leave the Premier League and still be quite good at football.
Yeah, if for anyone who hasn't seen it, there is a splendid Edin Dzeko interview in the Guardian on the Guardian website that was put up yesterday ahead of that game, and which he sort of scoffed at this notion that he has a reputation maybe for not trying and not giving his all in games, and he pretty much put that one to bed and said, you know, he's as hungry and as determined as the next man. Maybe it's just the way he carries himself. Sometimes he doesn't look as enthusiastic as perhaps he is. But it was a wonderful goal, a wonderful game. Eden Hazard was excellent. David Luiz, brilliant strike from outside the box. Morato setting up Hazard. And, you know, we got the trademark Dzeko header as well from a few yards out. And Antonio Conte was very, very unhappy afterwards. He mentioned the fact that he was missing some key players, and Jose Mourinho has got a dig in it. Well, we're presuming it's at him, that about a certain manager who's always moaning and whining.
Who cry at their injured players.
Yeah.
That's what Jose said.
Sounds like he's singing a song.
I would love to see that, wouldn't it? I would love to see also Antonio Conte burst into tears in a press conference at the injuries he's got. Didn't he say he only had 11 fit players for the Watford game? Something like that.
Don't know. He is down to what Harry Redknapp would describe as the bare bones, obviously, because a few of the players came out of last night's game with knocks. But, you know, he's not the first manager to suffer an injury crisis. He won't be the last. He just has to make the best of it. I mean, the notion of a Chelsea manager complaining about not having enough players when you look at how many they have out on loan at various clubs is just absolutely laughable.
Precisely. And you look as well in terms of the quality of one of those players they brought back, in terms of Andreas Christensen, who did so well away at Borussia Mönchengladbach for 2 years and has come back really looking like the sort of player who can fit into that back three. But I thought Chelsea in general last night were actually quite poor. Roma dominated for almost the entirety of that game. And I struggle to remember any time when Chelsea had a real sustained spell of pressure. They took their chances excellently, but I thought Morata looked very isolated up front.
Yeah, it felt like at the beginning of the game there were chances there for them, because Roma were, as Napoli had a night earlier, playing this very high press, and they did get caught out. I mean, obviously the Luiz goal, which is a sensational strike, was basically passed to him by Hanezos.
It's a good one too.
It was a gorgeous one too, if only they'd been on the same team. I agree. I think Roma had the better of the game, and I think that just because I don't want to sort of not get to this, just go back to Dzeko for a second. I think we have this tendency, and it's not even just about leaving the Premier League, because again, another player left the Premier League at a point where I think a lot of people looked at him and thought, oh, maybe he's done. You know, he'd had a bad last season at Man City, he'd been injured, he struggled, and frankly it's not even that he went to Roma and was set the world alight right away. He had a really tough first season and everyone was calling him Edin Dzeko, which is Edin the Blind. It's just a sort of riff on his name, like, but he's got better, and I think we don't allow people the possibility to get better. And you're talking about a guy who's 30, not or maybe he's 31 now, but he's not 40. He's at an age where he is capable of improving. And he had said, even in the build-up to this game, he said, I feel like I am the best I have been in my career. And I think that's a valid thing that we don't leave room for in football. Yeah, players are not constant.
Absolutely right. The players are the level you've decided they're at. And that's their level, and they'll never go up and they never go down, and they just stay that for their whole career, right, which is patently nonsense, isn't it? Okay, and then can you bring players back from loan? How does this work? Could Chelsea go and get Tammy Abraham back?
It depends on the contract and the agreement. I think a lot of them would have the option perhaps to recall them at Christmas or in the halfway through the season.
Nice if they wrap them up like a present.
But yeah, it basically depends on... Wasn't there... what was the controversy last year where Arsenal had some player out on loan that they wanted back, and they were running low on bodies and they needed Wilshere back, and it turned out they'd have forgotten or hadn't realised they needed to include a clause in the contract, a recall clause. And, you know, it was quite embarrassing for them, you know, this top flight apparently brilliantly run football club making such a basic clerical error out of ignorance. It wasn't even an oversight, it was ignorance.
There's a case of that in Italy that sort of was one of the big transfer situations of the summer, because Juventus loaned Spinazzola to Atalanta for two seasons and decided in the summer, after he had a brilliant season, that actually we could do with him starting for us, and they weren't able to make it work. And you know, they even sort of were sort of negotiating, trying to offer money, trying to offer everything, and Atalanta were like, no, he's a good player, we'll keep him around for another year, thanks.
Also in that group, Carabag 0, Atletico Madrid 0. Carabag had 10 men for the last 15 minutes. Atletico, yet to win in the Champions League, have only scored with one of their 44 shots in the competition this season, and that was from the penalty spot. They've had 17 shots on target. Spurs, Real Madrid, which is where we were meant to start, Paolo, until you rudely started talking about Chelsea. We don't want to make sort of foolish, bland statements, but have Spurs arrived on the European scene, Barry?
It was a very good performance from a young team without a huge amount of European experience. Very assured, very mature. At times, it looked like they might get overrun, and it's a game that could have gone either way. Both goalkeepers were forced to make outstanding saves. Hugo Lloris is from Karim Benzema. It was one of the best saves I've ever seen. The cynic in me says it was a fluke. But crikey,
after what he did against Chicharito last year in that Leverkusen game, which was equally stunning as well.
Yeah, well, like I say, the cynic in me, but I'm not a very cynical man, so that's just a small.
I go back to the fact someone below the line has said you updated your Wikipedia page to say you contracted misery at an early age.
I've seen that. That's harsh. Funny.
No, they were good, and if you think about it, I know who was missing. Carvajal was missing, was he? And Bale was missing for Real Madrid, but feasibly, at the start of the season, you would have said Spurs midfield would have been Wanyama, Dembele and Ali. And none of them were there. And Harry Winks, a lot was made of his England debut. But this, you know, like you say, you don't want to go overboard. But he looked so comfortable at the Bernabeu playing against that midfield. And that's just very impressive and sort of hopeful for England.
And so encouraging as well to see a young English player going and driving at the opposition like that, when you just see how... I think sometimes they look afraid on that big stage, but I thought Spurs, and actually the way that they've acquitted themselves generally in this group and in Europe so far, I would say arguably they've been the most impressive British side in the Champions League so far this season. Okay, if you look at the Manchester City group, for example, with Napoli, with Shakhtar Donetsk, that I don't think that's quite as strong as this Spurs group, but the way that they handled the game against Borussia Dortmund, for example, and now this away game against Real Madrid as well, they really seem to have learned from their experience last season, where in a group where it was much more up for grabs, they have really kind of grown as a side and look to have actually learned to play a much more European style, doesn't quite describe it correctly, but they almost look more knowledgeable in terms of how to play this sort of occasion.
The selection of Llorente was interesting, wasn't
it? Yeah, people, when the team was announced, Twitter sort of lit up with Spurs fans really shocked that Llorente was playing up front with Kane, but no, I don't think any of them were thinking it was a bad idea. It was very much in Poch, we trust. You know, he knows what he's doing. He has the total faith of the Spurs support, so he can make confident decisions like that. It could have backfired. It didn't, because Llorente was excellent. You know, his link-up play, superb hold-up play. And weirdly, I think a lot of people saw this as a game, you know, it was very much promoted that this is where Harry Kane will announce himself. Now, he didn't play badly, but it certainly wasn't one of his better games, I would say, and he missed a chance. Keylor Navas made a stunning save from him as well, and, you know, you'd have put the farm on him scoring that.
If he's world class, he scores that, surely.
Don't go there.
And I also thought Christian Eriksen, you know, who I've admired him since he was just like 16 or 17 playing for Denmark, caught my eye at some tournament, and he used to flatter to deceive when he was a kid, but I think he's really one of the world's great. I would put him among the best in the world, but he doesn't really have that reputation. But I thought he didn't have one of his better games either, but a lot of the other more unheralded Tottenham players stepped up.
But it's interesting because Real Madrid also are not very good at home this season. Spurs are not very good at Wembley this season, and it'll be very interesting to see how the return leg goes.
I mean, but I think the point is now at this stage in the group, Tottenham are so well set up, especially with Dortmund dropping points again, that they can afford to not win at home. I think this, you know, this point was big for them. Obviously, again, Dortmund's result was big for them, but they've put themselves in a position now where they can actually play with a fair bit of freedom, and they'll still probably make it through. Just to name one more name, because we've nearly gone through the full 11. I thought Davinson Sanchez sort of validating that decision to sign him, allowing them to play that way in Europe, particularly with the back three or back five, depending on how you want to look at it last night. But I think that's, you know, a signing that's working out really nicely for them.
You mentioned that Dortmund game, 1-1 in Nicosia, Archie, and another. I mean, that it's sort of a total comedy. 20 seconds for the Dortmund keeper. It's Roman Bürki. And he's made more than. Well, he's got this problem at his near post, which if people shoot it 100 miles an hour at his near post, he's still at fault. But this was disastrous.
If you continue to be beaten at your near post, then I think that there are questions there to be asked about, are you standing in the correct position? Should you be standing half a metre?
The job for you.
Half a metre further forward. I can understand the criticism of him because of that mistake occurring again and again. But Bürki's howler there, I think, covered up much greater problems for Dortmund, which was the fact that they only managed to create a handful of chances against Nicosia, a side which Spurs managed to breeze past. And this is the third or fourth performance now from Borussia Dortmund where they've not performed particularly well. Things haven't gone well. And I think that for Peter Bosz, it's about trying to weigh up what he was talking about a few weeks ago in terms of he wants to combine playing attractive football with being successful. He truly believes that that is possible. But you wonder whether you can see it in one way and go, okay, are they being simply too attacking and too ambitious? And should they perhaps box a little bit cleverer, if that's a word? I don't think it is a word,
is it?
Is it a word?
Yeah.
I would say box a little more clever. But
box a little more clever.
We won't fight
more cleverly. Okay. Cleverly, probably. Then I think that might be able to help. But they do have loads of injuries, particularly at fullback. They've got four fullbacks out right now, which doesn't help them at all. But I think they're heading in the right direction. But having lost to Leipzig at the weekend, they still top the Bundesliga. But
they've got it in them, though. I was at that game at Wembley against Spurs, and for 20 minutes, or for most of the first half, it was a different sort of. I mean, Tottenham couldn't get the ball.
Spurs got played off the park in that first half, yet scored from their only two chances. And even in the second half at 2-1, when Aubameyang scores a goal which was not offside but got ruled out for being offside, you wonder whether the momentum would actually swing in the other direction after that.
So, momentum is also a word.
Momentum. That sounds like I'm rapping.
There is a question with Dortmund, which has been applied to Italy to Napoli, so I'd be interested to know if this is being talked about in Germany as well. Like, is there possibly some suggestion that might be better off just to get out the Champions League this year and worry about an opportunity in the league that isn't there every year?
Amongst the fans, 100%. Because that's actually what happened in the season when they went on and won the double in 2011-2012. So they were able to concentrate fully on the league. And I think that with a club like Borussia Dortmund fighting on all three fronts, particularly when you have to play Bayern Munich in the league and search for that sort of consistency, Borussia Dortmund have had a thing in the last few seasons, particularly where they struggle after Champions League midweek games. And they've got a really difficult game this weekend away at Eintracht Frankfurt as well. So I think that it would actually be very beneficial for them were they to not go through in the Champions League. But I think they'd still probably pick up the Europa League spot given this. They've got a home game to come against Nicosia, and you would question whether they'll still pick up points against Real Madrid and Spurs.
Was that their strongest team against Nicosia, or was their rotation?
They still had quite a few injuries, for example, at fullback. Jeremy Toljan got pulled off at half time against Leipzig because he was just having such a terrible game. So, I mean, you might question whether it was their strongest goalkeeper given the way that Roman Bürki's playing right now. But overall, they still had certainly the players there. When Aubameyang is up front, for example, that's still a sign that Dortmund are very much taking this seriously.
Ale Patel says, I can't wait for Spurs-Liverpool on Sunday. Spurs will be subconsciously still patting themselves on the back for their Madrid performance. I can't see any way Liverpool will be outplayed. Klopp against the top six is excellent. I predict the much-vaunted Spurs will be made to look ordinary. That's the game on Sunday. Liverpool won 7-0 in Maribor. Some Liverpool fans slightly frustrated that everyone is saying, it's only Maribor. I know that's what you want to say now, Barry, but...
No, I'm just... I don't know. I'm astonished isn't the word. I'm just that your team's just beaten someone 7-0 and you still find something to complain about, that people aren't, we're not getting enough credit, you know. It is just Maribor. They're not very good. I read somewhere some pundits saying that they had a good European Champions League pedigree. They don't. I think they've been in once before. They got maybe a point. So, you know, but 7-0, that's a thrashing. I personally think if you go 6-0 up in a game of football, the game should automatically end, whatever stage of the game it is.
Brilliant idea.
But, yeah.
Ooh, But I mean, doesn't that?
There's some goal difference.
I feel like it would only be valid if you then make all the players on a losing team have to continue running laps until the time is up. Because otherwise, there could be some serious calculus late in the season. Oh, should we just rest our legs in this one and we'll be fresh for the game on Sunday?
I think Felix Magath likes that idea very much.
You haven't thought it through, but I'm with you, Barry.
Yeah, I mean,
but you also want games to be an hour long, don't you?
Yeah, but that would,
final would have been particularly short in Brazil a few years back.
That would reduce the chances of there being more than six goals, though.
Hey, I was very angry that Liverpool weren't wearing...
I basically just want the football just to end as soon as possible.
Oh, you'll get more criticism. You've got the dream job, Barry, and you don't appreciate it. Well, Oxlade-Chamberlain scored, which is good. They scored 7. Well done to Liverpool.
Isn't that more an indication of Maribor's strength when Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain can regain his confidence in such fashion?
Spartak Moscow won 5-1 against Sevilla in that group. So Group E, interesting. Spartak level on points with Liverpool.
If you want a case for the saying on Maribor, Spartak Moscow, who are joint top of that group, I think they drew with Maribor, didn't they? So
good point.
It's not a nothing to go there and win that.
Spartak level on points with Liverpool, Sevilla third, 1 point behind. Manchester City 2, Napoli 1. The last six penalties in the Champions League against Manchester City had all been missed until Napoli scored one. Ben Mendy, who's brilliant on Twitter, and Edison saved the first penalty. And did you see this? He put up a brick wall saying Edison is a brick wall. And then when Napoli scored the penalty, he put a brick wall with a hole where Napoli scored the penalty. How impressed were you by Manchester City, Paolo?
Yeah, I mean, given that Napoli are, according to Pep himself, arguably one of the best teams he's ever faced in his career, which was some impressive Pep hyperbole. But I mean, you know what I will say for this, because Pep sometimes can do this when he's playing teams, but I do think it's worth noting that he was actually praising Napoli back in the spring before they'd been drawn against each other. So it's not like this is an insincere, I've never looked at this team before. He was doing it before they played. But yeah, first, to get to the actual question, first 30 minutes, I thought Man City were brilliant. It could easily have been 4-0. They had one, it was Kevin De Bruyne who had the shot that came down off the bar and was just I actually loved Kevin De Bruyne's reaction to that. The camera sort of cut to him and he gave this sort of angry hands thrown shrug, like you do if you've been trying to do it on the PlayStation. You felt like you had done everything right and the computer just hadn't allowed you the thing that you deserved. I felt like it was that moment of just, why isn't the world cooperating with me? I'm brilliant and it should have gone in. But yeah, that one, and then I can't remember who was it, Jesus, who had the one cleared off the line by Koulibaly. They could have been out of sight before Mertens ever had the chance to miss that penalty.
Pep's hyperbole. Where do you want to begin? Because during his time at Bayern, I was just reading the other day, because of this, in fact, this comment against Napoli being the best team that he's ever faced. I mean, he did it in a few occasions where he was being sincere when he was talking about Joshua Kimmich, the right back, being almost his son. And you saw this in terms of this grand lecture that he gave him at the end of a game against Dortmund. But so many other occasions where he's just saying it, when he says, for example, on Mario Mandzukic that he loves Mario and then he left the next summer, that he would like 1,000 Dantes and then he left 2 weeks later. and that he would also like 18 or 19 Rafinhas. Sebastian Roda is the best professional I've ever met. So
basically, if you're Rafinha and you hear, oh, Pep would like 19 of me, you go, oh, that's really going to make you feel good. And then someone goes, yeah, but he wants 1,000. And then suddenly you're sad again.
I quite like it because it's gone to the extent where it's funny. And it's actually sort of a game in terms of working out, okay, when does he really mean it? Yeah. Like when he's talking about Kevin De Bruyne, for example, then I think you have to say that he does mean it, because the way that De Bruyne is playing right now is sensational. He did the same at Wolfsburg, to be honest. He carried that team to second place in a German Cup pretty much a few years ago. And we got that show of temper from him at the end as well.
Oh, it was so great, wasn't it?
Yeah, it reminded me. I mean, I think that his temper has only kind of, it's bubbled to the surface on a few occasions. It reminded me of when he, against Eintracht Frankfurt, it was for Wolfsburg a few years ago, and this ball boy wouldn't give him the ball quick enough. So he said, "Give me the ball, mother," and then you can imagine what the next word or part of that word which followed was. For example, he had to pay a €20,000 fine for that as well. So there is certainly that temper side of him. But I think that it's good that he has somebody like David Silva, for example, who is telling him, "Look, just go down the tunnel. You really don't need to get involved in this."
Hey, did the ball boy get the money? Because that would be good.
The ball boy, I don't think, got the money. Okay. He got an apology and a signed shirt, if I remember correctly.
Also in that group, Shakhtar won 2-1 at Feyenoord. Let's go to Portugal. Group A, Benfica 0, Manchester United 1. How sorry do we feel for this goalkeeper, Milos Villar, who basically caught it but just forgot the goal existed and just carried it into his goal? I mean,
That's the only bit of this game I've actually seen.
He was born in 1999. I mean, the fact he can do anything, the fact he can talk and walk. I mean, it's so depressing that somebody in 1999, born then. Here's a quote from Jose. "Sometimes I feel that to be good defensively is a crime, but it's not a crime." It's not a crime, is it? Clean sheets, but basically Manchester United are boring and Manchester City are interesting, and that's life.
I mean,
it?
This is, you know, it's standard Jose straw man, isn't it? Like, oh yeah, to be good defensively. No one's saying it's bad to be good defensively. Everyone's saying you're boring to watch, which they are sometimes. I suspect that given how much and how many compelling games there were in this week, none of us saw the full 90 minutes of this match. But I will say that for that kid, Villa, they did highlight, I thought, nicely in the ITV highlights, because Matthew said afterwards, look, Mourinho said 18-year-old keeper's playing his first Champions League game, put a lot of crosses in, try and test him. And in the highlights, you could see actually that he dealt with a lot of really tricky balls underneath the crossbar well. It's just that he also fluffed one.
Just going back to the, you know, Manchester United good but defensive, Manchester City good but entertaining. You know, fans, Manchester United fans will defend their sort of negative tactics. But as a neutral, you're offered a ticket to see one or the other. Which one are you going to take?
Well, of course. I mean, Man United fans would say, "I don't care, we're winning, I don't care."
Yeah.
But you're right.
And they're perfectly entitled
exactly,
to do that.
Exactly.
But the thing, I think people tend to forget, and, you know, obviously for Jose, it's his job, it's his livelihood, he wants to win things. But the rest of us go to football, it's a leisure activity. You know, there's enough tedium from Monday to Friday in the workplace. But
Are you bored right now?
No. Okay, I like my work, but it's an outlet. And although you wouldn't tell from attending quite a few games, people are supposed to go to enjoy themselves and have a good time. So yeah, give me the Flair team any day.
Well, I think the frustration is looking at that Manchester United squad and the amount of Flair players that they have going forward. Rashford, for example, who you just love to see open up and run at players, and Mkhitaryan and Mata and Pogba. Okay, he's obviously out injured at the moment, but you feel that there is such potential there for an attacking unit which could really entertain. And I think that's almost part of the frustration of it, is that you see all these players with that potential who are just kind of being held back, I think probably a little bit too strong, but
I
contained.
How they feel about being forced to play with the Hamburg. I asked Ray Houghton this on our radio show last Sunday, and he never actually answered the question. But, you know, as a footballer in a good team, how would you feel about having to play sort of within yourself?
Well, United fans will say they have scored a lot of goals this season. You know, they were very defensive against Liverpool and last night, but even still, they're still scoring a lot of goals. Rashford went off with a knee injury. They go to Huddersfield. I forgot to let you know that Man City play Burnley and Chelsea play Watford, but you probably know that if you support those teams. That Watford game will be interesting, won't it? Because Watford playing very well. Chelsea got a lot of injuries. Yep. In that group, Man United's group, Cesc 0, Basel 2. Oberlin, I don't know if anyone saw this. He had, you know, it's a sort of triumph of that, what you have to be as a centre forward. Missed two absolute sitters. and kept going on. I mean, I would have just crumpled and died, you know, if I'd missed those two. I wouldn't have tried to get in the box, but he eventually scored a goal. So well done to you. If you're listening, Mr. Oberlin. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll round up the rest of the Champions League, talk about the Europa League and a bit more besides. Welcome back to part two of Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The rest of the Champions League, Group B, Bayern Munich 3, Celtic 0. Archie, that banana skin Bayern, managed to get past a stout, well, not particularly Celtic side, who matched them formation, which seemed interesting, I think.
They matched them for 3 minutes in the first half.
Okay, that's okay.
When Bayern were kind of working out, okay, what is Celtic going to be like for tonight? And then Bayern just completely overpowered them. I don't think Christian Gamboa will ever want to see Kingsley Coman again. But sadly, he'll probably have to do that in about 2 weeks' time. But Bayern were really quite good again. If I was Celtic, I'd be a little bit annoyed that I'd not faced Bayern Munich around a month earlier, because this was Bayern back towards their best. I think we still need to see them tested. Joshua Kimmich, the right back, was talking after the game about we'll see where they truly are in terms of progress under Jupp Heynckes in about 3 weeks' time, because by then, okay, this weekend they've got Hamburg away, which you can just mark down as an away win right now. Then after that, they've got Leipzig away in the cup and Leipzig at home in the Bundesliga before playing Dortmund. After those games, if they come through those unscathed, then I think that it's fair to say that Bayern are back. But when Iron Robin, for example, is putting in a sly tackle to do his defensive shift, I think it tells you in terms of how on board he is, and indeed how reinvigorated this Bayern Munich side is now under Jupp Heynckes.
Would Celtic be annoyed, Barry, that the goals they conceded, well, it was two headers and then a header that was well saved by Craig Gordon and a rebound, that if you're going to do anything, be able to do anything like defending crosses, you should be able to do it. If Bayern play through you, then fair enough.
Yeah, well, Brendan Rodgers said after the game he was disappointed at the goals they conceded. I don't think he had any massive complaints about losing. You know, they were outclassed, but the goals they conceded were shoddy. You know, any team should be able to defend those. And I think Rodgers got a bit of criticism as well for trying to take the game to Bayern, and he made no apologies for that. He said, look, we're going to decide how we're going to play. That's what I decided we were going to do. And, you know, if we'd set back, we could have got an even worse hiding. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, those weren't his exact words. And it's just heartwarming to see, you know, he said, we're learning from this. He's been under no illusions from the start. Their aim is just to qualify for the Europa League, and in the very unlikely event they would have been good enough to finish in the top two, that would have been a bonus. But just Celtic don't have the resources to compete with that quality of opposition.
I thought it was a little bit disappointing in terms of, I thought they did actually sit back for large spells of that first half. Okay, it is very difficult to deal with this Bayern Munich side when you have that kind of quality. But what was, I think, frustrating from a neutral point of view was actually when they did get chances to break out, they were just a little bit hesitant with Patrick Roberts, for example, and it was just about choosing the right options when they had those counter-attacking opportunities, which they did have in the first half, actually, on a few separate occasions. So I think that there's certainly areas where they can hurt Bayern Munich in the return leg. But I think that it was just a bit disappointing to only see Celtic truly try and attack Bayern when they were 3-0 down. And that was the only time that we really saw them actually have some joy and actually try and test Sven Ulreich in the Bayern goal, who is not as good as Manuel Neuer. And
is he better than Roman Bürki?
No.
Oh, no. Hang on. Slightly Vicar of Dibley.
Yeah. Yes. No. Yes. No. Roman Bürki is better than Sven Ulreich.
Okay. Well, Celtic's quest for the Europa League then helped by PSG putting four past Anderlecht in Anderlecht. Kylian Mbappe scored 8 Champions League goals, more than any other teenager. At Group D, Barcelona 3, Olympiacos 1. Lionel Messi's 100th goal in European competition. What more can we
Cristiano?
Say?
Did again? Faster than Cristiano.
Did he?
Fewer games.
But who's better?
I don't think anyone's ever had that discussion before.
There was a brilliant moment in that game when Gerard Piqué got sent off for Barcelona. And the camera pans to, I mean, he scored, it's a second yellow card, and he scored with his hand, therefore the referee sent him off. And it cuts to these two very excitable Barcelona fans who are celebrating because they don't realise that he's been sent off. So you see Piqué's forlorn face followed by these two Barcelona fans who are celebrating, going, yeah. That was quite new.
Juve 2, Sporting Lisbon 1. Pjanic, I mean, just a lovely, he's a lovely footballer, Paolo, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lovely free kick and a very timely one, because actually there was a moment when this group was starting to look quite, still not by any stretch over, but this group was starting to look quite hairy for Juventus, because Sporting went away to Olympiacos. Juan Jesus, the manager, already has a bit of a thing with Juventus because his Benfica knocked them out of the Europa League semi-final a couple of years ago. So it wasn't, Juventus aren't playing great at the moment either, sort of being the most fundamental point, actually. They aren't playing great. They conceded a terrible own goal at the beginning. But when you've got Miralem Pjanic taking your free kicks, you've always got way back into the game. And the one other person who, his goal wasn't as beautiful, but who keeps digging them out in the Champions League in particular, Mario Mandzukic, I think he's scored in the final. I think he's possibly scored in his last four Champions League appearances, and sort of a player who gets forgotten about next to Higuain and Dybala sometimes, I think. But he's just a really important player still.
How good is Mandzukic? I don't watch enough Italian football to be able to form an opinion, but I always have like a sneaky five or a tenner on him any time there's a major tournament to be top scorer, and he always lets me down. Like, and not just lets me down, but like really lets me down. So I'm not sure what to make of him. I like him enough to put the bet on, and then it loses and I wonder why I did it. But I will do it again should Croatia, you know, get to this summer's World Cup.
Is that the sign of madness, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not learning from your mistakes.
Well, you see, I'm still up because I maybe do 10-20 quid every tournament, and I once had Milan Baroš.
That's a good one.
That was a 30-something to one.
I'm still up because I had a tenner on Gary Doherty to score the first goal in FA Cup semi-final for Spurs, and he did.
Ooh.
And then I'm actually not still up. It's just
you're
a really good bet.
You stop betting at that point. I guess to answer the question, I think of Mandzukic as an extremely solid player technically. I don't think he's a player who sort of fires the imagination that much, but what I think of him actually almost like his strongest quality, he's definitely one of those guys you look at and say, this, you watch him, there's no question he sacrifices himself for the team, he does what's required of him. But I actually think he's just one of those guys who fundamentally plays to the same level all the time. And I think that some guys, you see, they sort of really go with their temperament, they really go with their mood, and they can be on song and they're untouchable, and then when things start going against them, they fold. And I think you look at Mandzukic, even the fact of the Champions League final when he came up with that goal, it was a time when Juventus didn't really have their heads together, and Mandzukic is the guy who always has his head together even when the rest of the team doesn't. And I think that's almost like beyond his technical ability, which is certainly of a caliber that puts him very capably of playing at this, you know, the highest level of European football. It's just the fact that you know he's going to keep being Mario Mandzukic even when things are going against you, even when the rest of the team is maybe struggling.
Group G, Monaco 1, Beşiktaş 2. Lex got in touch on the Ryan Babel babble hashtag. He said, don't break the streak. Well, Ryan Babel had a goal ruled out for offside and got an assist as well. So well done, Ryan. Leipzig 3, Porto 2, Archie. How did Kevin Campbell get on?
He played very well at the weekend, in particular as well. He very much helped Leipzig control the midfield against Dortmund for long periods. But I think if you're talking about this game, I think that there is that remarkable piece of skill from Jean-Kevin Augustin, who...
Tell us about him. I don't know a lot about this player, and I should, and he looked marvellous.
He arrived from PSG in the summer, and is proving a very good alternative to Timo Werner up front when he has played there as well. Very skillful player, and the sort of player that I think has defenders quivering when he starts to run at them. And that was shown. He scored with a fantastic finish as well, Leipzig's third. And I think actually this is a real good sign for Leipzig in terms of they have Augustin, they have Bruma, who is frighteningly quick as well. That they've got these players stepping up to the fore. When last season it looked like they were quite reliant on the likes of Naby Keita, of course, who's en route to Liverpool next summer, Emil Forsberg, and of course Timo Werner as well, who's not been playing in some of these games. So it's a real sign of their strength that these players, the likes of Bruma and Augustin, but also worth mentioning a name which will probably be in the forefront in maybe 2 or 3 years' time, in Deo Upamecano, 18-year-old centre-back who, if you talk to people at Leipzig, people are saying that he'll be one of the world's top
top five defenders in the next few years.
Upamecano. Oh, sort of like really good Lego.
Well, actually, he was playing, it was Upamecano against Ivan Meccano the other night. So, yeah, Upamecano does sound like, you know, that next level.
Yeah, Duplo was my level. Right, the Europa League. Arsenal go to Red Star Belgrade. Arsenal View says, what would it take for Wenger to not stay beyond this year? 2017 away form has been close to a lower mid-table team, yet there are no consequences. What do you think would have to happen?
I don't know. It feels like what it would take is a fundamental shift in the thinking at the top of the club. It would take Stan Kroenke to have a level of interest and attention to what's going on that goes beyond, is the bottom line still producing what I expect from it? I think it would take someone to have the desire and ability to impose themselves on the leadership of the direction of the football club in general, which has not happened in a while.
Everton Leon, David sends a tweet. Everton are so shite that our office was broken into through the night. They took the valuables but left my Leon ticket on the desk. Seriously.
I think that's just very considerate on the part of the burglars.
Yeah, but Everton aren't...
Or inconsiderate, depending on your point of view, I suppose.
Anyway, I mean, they just need a striker. We all know they need a striker. They don't have one. Elsewhere, Nice, Lazio, AC Milan, AEK Athens, Atalanta, Limassol. Paolo, briefly explain if these are exciting.
The Italian clubs in general are paying attention to the Europa League, so they're likely to be taken seriously. Milan are doing so badly at home that they sort of can't afford not to try and keep winning these games, because it's the one source of positivity in the season right now. Might be their best route to the Champions League, the way things are going in the league as well at the moment. Yeah, I mean, I think they'll all be games with a competitive edge to them, and Lazio just beat Juventus last weekend, so why not Nice?
Same job for you, Archie, for Bate Borisov versus Cologne and Hoffenheim versus Istanbul Büyükşehir.
I don't think that the German clubs, in terms of in this instance, you've got Hertha as well who are in action. I think that they lack the strength and depth to truly challenge on three fronts if they're playing in the German Cup as well. Cologne in particular have been terrible so far this season. You know that club is not doing particularly well when the front page of the local newspaper was of the club mascot Hennis and mocking him throwing up into a bucket on Saturday after their worst start to a Bundesliga season, or the worst start of any Bundesliga club to a season since the inaugural season in 63-64.
What is Hennis?
Hennis is a goat. Oh,
okay, good.
Hennis is a goat. Hennis gets marched out between 20 cheerleaders before every home game to the Rocky theme tune. It's quite something to watch.
So he's an actual goat, not a man dressed
actual
as a goat.
Okay. Yes, actual goat. Hennis the eighth. This is because seven others have passed away.
Okay. Are the cheerleaders goats?
No. Oh. No, but there is actually a cheerleader squad that Cologne have, of a team of over 100, which they rotate, and they do a performance for every Bundesliga game.
100?
Yeah.
Has there ever been a sort of hijinksy saga in which a rival team has tried to pinch Hennis amidst sort of escapades and shenanigans? Because that sounds like, if this was a movie, what would happen?
Yes. The Borussia Mönchengladbach once tried that, I think successfully, in terms of trying to pick off Hennis. Because
is their mascot a wolf or a troll?
They are known as the Foals.
Okay.
And Borussia Mönchengladbach of Cologne are one of the biggest rivals in German football. So yes, the Gladbach fans did once try and plot to steal Hennis.
World Cup playoffs then. Northern Ireland, Switzerland, Denmark, the Republic, Croatia, Greece, Sweden, Italy. I interviewed Michael O'Neill yesterday for The Wireless, and he said he'd take a 0-0 in the first leg, but would like to take a lead, unsurprisingly. How do we view these games, Barry?
Well, from an Irish perspective, Republic of Ireland, I just wanted to avoid Italy. I don't think we could have asked for a better draw than Denmark with them away in the second leg, but I would imagine they're even more thrilled to draw us than we are to get them. If whichever side loses that match over two legs doesn't deserve to be at the World Cup.
Northern Ireland, I mean, it's similar. I think they probably didn't, you know, they all wanted to avoid Italy, didn't they? But Switzerland had a good group. A lot of people saying, well, Switzerland's morale will be low because they won 9 out of 10 qualifiers, and so they'll be sad. But presumably, they've got a couple of weeks to be less sad.
Yeah, there is a reason why they won 9 out of 10 qualifiers. Mm. Yeah.
What about Italy? Are the Italians happy with Sweden or not happy with Sweden?
I think they sort of viewed that as an average draw. If anything, I think Italy were quite happy to avoid Ireland because they haven't always been stress-free or indeed successful run-ins with the Irish national team down the years. So I think probably in some ways that was the one they most wanted to avoid. But Italy should go through, but at the same time, I think there is a genuine anxiety because, frankly, Gianpiero Ventura, the manager, is not doing a great job.
Right, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll talk about Craig Shakespeare's sacking, look ahead to a couple of Premier League games, do your questions and feedback corner. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Craig Shakespeare sacked after 4 months in charge. His record wasn't too bad. If you look at it as a whole, played 26, won 11, drawn 6, lost 9. But 8 of those wins came in the first 13 games and only 3 in the next 13. Was it too early, Barry?
I don't think so. I mean, there would be people who say what goes around comes around. And, you know, I think there are people who still think he and his players knifed Claudio Ranieri in the back. I thought Ranieri's sacking was harsh at the time, was widely ridiculed by many Leicester fans who said, were very quick to forget what he'd achieved with the club and thought relegation would be the be-all and end-all and, you know, as if they got relegated, they'd go off a cliff. Shakespeare did a good job in keeping them up. I think it is harsh, this decision, because, you know, they've been beaten by some very good teams so far this season. But it was one of those appointments where my feeling is they didn't really want to give it to him, but they had to because he kept them up, and I would have comfortably put a bet on, quite a sizable bet on with anyone when he was appointed that he wouldn't last this season. I didn't think it'd be this quick. But
Who would be a good fit? I was sat next to Big Sam yesterday for 3 hours, so I asked him repeatedly, and he doesn't want it. Right. But he might go for the USA job, apparently, which should be interesting. Pardew is apparently interested. What was that reaction, Barry?
Well, I just think that if you're going to appoint Pardew, you might as well have just kept Shakespeare. I mean, I've seen the list, the bookies' favourites to get the job, and it's thoroughly uninspiring. They may well go for someone left field, I don't know, but yeah, when you hear some of the usual suspects, I mean, Chris Coleman's been linked with the job as well. I think that would be, again, you might as well keep Shakespeare. I'm still not convinced Chris Coleman is a very good manager. He did quite well with Wales, but I think club management, I don't think he's ever proved himself.
Yeah. Producer Jonathan is saying quite well and looking quite shocked at your Chris Coleman comments. I think he's done pretty well with Wales, Chris. I agree with you that international management is different to club management.
I would argue on the Welsh thing, I don't think Wales got enough credit for getting to the semi-final of the Euros, and I also think they've got nowhere near enough criticism for failing to get out of that group they were in for World Cup qualifying, because they should have walked it, and I would blame him for that. But yeah, by the same token, I do have to give him credit for getting them to the semi-final.
The real difficulty is that outside of the top seven in the Premier League, it's just a battle to survive, really, and that demands a certain amount of pragmatism. You saw it in terms of the appointment of Roy Hodgson at Crystal Palace after what Frank de Boer was trying to do, or evidently not trying to do. So it would be nice to see a club like Leicester, who have got resources. I mean, you look at the amount that they spent on Kelechi Iheanacho during the summer, for example. It would be nice to see them try something different, try with somebody along the lines of Marco Silva, for example.
The Premier League is back. Friday night football, West Ham, Brighton.
Andy Carroll's out,
yeah,
obviously, so Slaven Bilic is going to have to start. It'll be Chicharito and...
I thought we were
going
to say Slaven Bilic has to start. No. You know.
Well, I'd like to see that. Chicharito and Sacco. And it's kind of getting towards last chance saloon for him, I think. You know, he hasn't impressed for West Ham. He scored a winner against Swansea, but he's had very limited opportunities.
Just with Brighton, just to say something from a Bundesliga perspective in terms of Pascal Gross, who's, I think, been really quite good for them so far this season, and you wouldn't necessarily have expected that given the fact that he was very much fighting against relegation last season, but he's been a really excellent creative force, I think, for Brighton so far, and I don't know whether they're going to quite have enough to stay up.
Everton, Arsenal, Super Sunday, Spurs, Liverpool. It's a good Sunday. It's a nice Sunday to sit and watch football. Newcastle, Crystal Palace. There's actually says the club's up for sale, which I presume it's been up for sale quite a long time. But I says he's gone quite public about it.
No, it's officially up for
sale. Yeah, Richard Harvey asks, with their already large fan base and stadium size, can Newcastle become a, quote, big six club under a new rich owner and challenge for the league?
I think so. Huge club, one club city, huge fan base. I wouldn't say they're a sleeping giant. That'd be kind of condescending and patronising, but they're capable of a lot better than what's going on. They're playing Crystal Palace, and an old sparring partner of mine from a different life, Sean Hughes, died. The comedian died on Monday, I think it was. And I noticed in the obituary in The Guardian, in the comments section, he's one of many comedians actually support Crystal Palace. In Search Your Own, you would need a sense of humour gag. But someone said, I really, really hope you got to see them score on Saturday.
So. Hey, well, may rest in peace, Sean Hughes. Stoke, Bournemouth, Swansea, Leicester, Southampton, West Brom, the other games. In the Championship, four of the top six face each other this weekend. Wolves, Preston, Bristol City, Leeds. The Old Farm Derby is live on TV this Sunday. Ipswich haven't beaten Norwich since 2009. Norwich are unbeaten in eight. Today is 24 years since Norwich won at Bayern Munich.
Is producer Mel giving a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Very excited about this. He's eating a carrot as we speak, sitting in a tractor. There was a Coventry fan... Do you see him on the pitch on Tuesday night? They were losing 1-0 at home to Forest Green Rovers. He wandered on and just started berating every single player. And he was on there for quite a long time and no steward seems to do anything. Another great bit of football from the lower leagues. BCAFC writes, will there ever be a funnier piece of refereeing than at Bradford City on Tuesday night? Have you seen this? It's absolutely brilliant.
But the ref takes about, 4 or 5 minutes to book three different players?
Yeah, so is Chris Sargenson is the ref. And he's basically, there was like a melee, right, in front of the dugouts, okay? And the assistant referee called the ref over when calm was restored. And then there was this ridiculous time when the referee was walking around trying to find all the players he needed to book. And it got to the stage where all the fans were going, ooh, and he got to play a yellow card. They go, "Hey!" And went around. I think it took about 2.5 minutes. It took him 2 minutes to find one of the players. And he'd been just staying in the same place. He hadn't moved around. He wasn't trying to get away. He was just stood there waiting for it to happen. It was brilliant. England under-17s beat Japan 5-3 on penalties after a goalless draw. It went straight to penalties after 90 minutes. The England keeper, Curtis Anderson, plays for Manchester City under-18s, was chatting and shouting at every player who was taking a penalty against him. Which is really not on, isn't it? That's not cricket. Saved the third penalty, stepped up and slotted home the next one. England scored all five. So England-USA in the quarterfinals on Saturday. The USA beat Paraguay 5-0 with George's son Timothy Weah scoring a hat-trick. Jadon Sancho was called back by Borussia Dortmund. He scored the second in a 2-0 win for their under-19s against Apoel in the UEFA Youth League. So that's why he was brought back, I presume.
Yes, and I don't think England are particularly happy that he got brought back or got called back by Dortmund either. But I think that he will get a chance at Borussia Dortmund at some point this season, but he's going to find it very difficult to force his way past Andrei Yarmolenko, for example, Ukrainian star who's started superbly for them. Maximilian Philipp as well, their new signing from Freiburg. Christian Pulisic as well. To get in front of them in terms of a starting lineup place, he's going to find it difficult. But the way that everyone around Dortmund is talking about him in terms of his ability and his potential, I think he'll certainly get the odd start perhaps at one point this season, but you may have to wait till after Christmas.
Has anybody seen the tweet from Chorley FC which said, wanted keeper and midfielder must be able to play against Fleetwood Town in the FA Cup. Matt Irwin and Nick Horton, two of their players, are on loan from Fleetwood and therefore can't play, so they've sent a tweet asking for players. David Dunn tweeted to say he was available. Their manager is his former teammate Matt Janssen, said no thanks, David. A feedback corner, questions from below the line, begins. Vince, please stop saying below the line. It's monumentally irritating. And my football podcast time is spread rather thinly at the moment. Winky face. All right. Chris Adams says, if every Premier League manager was in a Royal Rumble, who would be the last man standing? It would depend on the draw, obviously. Yeah. He's written hashtag Pulis.
I feel like this question has been asked me before, and I feel like
it's a weird world where that's happened.
And I feel like at the time the answer was agreed to be Poyet, but obviously times have changed. I think I said at the time, we'll stand by, I would back Mourinho to cheat and therefore to emerge successful.
He'd have a weapon.
Yeah.
He'd get the chair.
Yeah.
I think someone, I can't remember who it was, but someone pointed out on Twitter that all bets are off in that one as long as Michael Appleton remains caretaker manager of Leicester, because he just looks ridiculously hard.
I get quite a few tweets saying I look like him, but when I've
you
had,
really don't.
I've had a terrible, you know, I've just gone wild in the gym and covered myself in tattoos.
I think Klopp would be quite decent in that. In that Premier League Royal Rumble, yeah. I don't. I think. I mean, you've seen him growl on the touchline.
I think Klopp would possibly do the best hype vid. I think that when you're talking about wrestling, you are talking about more than just the you know the actual winning, aren't you? You're talking about your ability to get. I think Klopp would get the crowd going.
Yeah.
Who would be the baddies? Jose would be a baddie.
Yeah.
Right. Who else?
I think Wenger might be a bad guy to grin.
But I think Wenger wouldn't really have any music. He'd just be there in a pair of Speedos. You know, I don't think
he. There's an image.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be. There'd certainly be a big show around him.
I think Slaven Bilic would be quite.
Oh yeah, very definitely. Good point. He would be. A lot of people criticising me for calling Gabriel Jesus. We hate it when people Spanishify our language, says Mr. Marco. James says, I'm travelling to Galway for the next few days. What's the one thing I should do when I'm there, Barry?
Just go for a wander down Shop Street, and yeah, there's lots of nice pubs there and places to eat. So yeah, fine shopping. I mean, you can see everything in Galway in afternoons. It's my favourite Irish city. And people ask me, you know, I'm thinking of going to Dublin. I also don't go to Dublin, go to Galway instead. Nice. Right.
Thanks for your time, Barry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paola.
Cheers.
Thanks, Archie. Would you like to wish your dad a happy birthday on the podcast?
Yeah. All right. Okay. Happy birthday, Dad. There you go.
Does he listen?
He will now.
Don't tell him what stage you wished him happy birthday in.
We'll be back on Monday. Hi everybody, Max here. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. News that there'd be no football match on Christmas Eve came out after we finished recording. I actually had a meeting with someone at Sky and asked him to announce the news before we were recording, but he didn't do that, which shows what power I have there or anywhere. But look, it does give me the chance to say we've got a live show coming up, and here's the future Mrs. Rushton to tell you all about it.
Do you like Messi and Ronaldo and other players? Because if you do, you should go and see Max and the podcast live on the 14th of December. I won't be there.
It is in the middle of London at the Emanuel Centre on Thursday, the 14th of December. Confirmed lineup: me, Glenn Denning, Barney Rone, the rest TBC. But will be many cameos and, you know, things. So, yeah, like, we just need a bigger audience than panel. Like, that's the first aim. Okay, so, like, six people and... that would be great.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.